you.
Great. I'd like to bring up the state team at this point. To my right is Dan Eisenbeis, our State Government Relations Manager, flanked on my left by Andy Smith, our Senior Associate of State Affairs. And also like to welcome our newest member of our team, Elizabeth Edwards, who's going to be helping us out today. So we started the process for building the state agenda back in August, basically on the tail end of wrapping up the legislative session, which concluded in early July. We have been working since then to research and vet issues for inclusion in this draft. We're going to begin with a PowerPoint on the state legislative session just to provide some context. But let me just say a few words about our community engagement process this year. Like in previous years, we have partnered with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to invite community members to help us generate concepts for both our state and federal agendas. This year, working closely with the mayor's office, we piloted some new ways community members can provide input we had established a phone line and an email account, and also by traditional mail. ONI helped us by emailing out that call for items out to each of the neighborhood associations and their community list, and the mayor's office helped us compile a summary of those ideas. Because that input period officially closed on Friday, we immediately sent out that list to each of your offices, so you have a sense of what some of those items are. And then we shared that list to the offices. We look forward to continuing to work with you all on items that came up there that you would like included in the agendas.
So the list that I got had 14 suggestions on it.
I think that's right.
Is that the sum total of what we got from that?
That is, yes. And most of it was by email from members.
So I'm just flagging that as a concern that in the past we've had, I think, hundreds of suggestions when we've had our more robust meetings when we encourage people to come and talk. Mm-hmm. So that's a great concern to me. So we're having a short session for the state, and still it's a good way to help engage our citizens in lobbying. So I hope we will. We have the actual in-person session on that coming up.
Right.
But it'll be interesting to see what kind of feedback we get at our council session, not having had very much feedback before.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner, and I do appreciate the feedback. Going into the short session, we thought that we might actually get more response from a call for items so that people don't have to take an evening, but that just email us their ideas. I think you bring up a good point, which is in the past when we have input sessions, we've had good turnout. So I think it will be something that we can look at going forward, especially into the next regular legislative session. We also, just to do a plug for, we will be doing an advocacy 101 training for the community, which is something we've had some great success in the past, on December 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Portland building. And this will be an opportunity for community members to learn about some effective lobbying techniques and effective advocacy. We'll engage some of our delegation members to, from their perspective, say what works for their offices. How can you really effectively move forward your ideas? We're also going to introduce a bit of a federal perspective this year as well. So we're trying some new things, but I do appreciate the point that the amount of feedback we had isn't as robust as we've had in prior years. So at this point, I would like to turn things over to Dan Eisenbeis to provide an overview of what's coming in the state legislative session.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning. Before giving an overview of the lay of the land, I just want to thank you all for your leadership, as well as thank our legislators as we advocate on the city's behalf in Salem. Turning to the slide presentation, as has been mentioned, the 2014 legislative session in February will mark the second regular short annual session. It'll be constitutionally limited to no more than 35 days in duration. The legislature's work, of course, begins in advance of session. Later this month, they will hold legislative days with interim committee meetings, and the deadline for submitting bill draft requests is actually on November 26th. In mid-January, the legislature will meet again for organizational purposes. As Martha mentioned, the city will host a Legislative Advocacy 101 workshop on December 10th, and we anticipate that you all will take up the legislative agenda for approval in January. The legislature will again be comprised of 34 Democrats and 26 Republicans in the House, and 16 Democrats and 14 Republicans in the Senate, meaning that any revenue-raising measures would require bipartisan support in order to reach the 3/5 threshold that is required. As you know, there is currently a vacancy in the Senate, which will be filled via appointment, but that appointment will not change the overall composition of the body. Whereas 2,700 bills were introduced in the 2013 long session, individual legislators will be limited to 2 bill draft requests apiece, and committees will be limited to 3 bill draft requests apiece, which translates to approximately 250 bills total. Turning to the next slide, potential major issues in the upcoming legislative session. So much of the focus in February will be on non-controversial bills, but a number of high-profile bills could be on the table. Perhaps most notably is potential authorization for an Oregon-led Columbia River crossing project. Also potentially on the table are limitations on telecommunications franchise fees, which, of course, are a major source of revenue for both the city of Portland and cities statewide, as well as potentially a legislative referral on a measure to legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana.
So before you move on, the last time the council as a whole discussed the Columbia River crossing was back in 2009. And I wonder, Mayor, if there's a place for having a council discussion on our position on an Oregon-only Columbia River crossing bridge at some point.
Well,
either that or we would be officially neutral on that because we haven't discussed it as a council.
I guess I'm open to that. I'm not sure how much value we can add or subtract to this endless debate about this project, but.
What I'm finding in the community is that even folks who were previously somewhat supportive of the project are like, no way, no how, should Oregonians pay for the entire thing? So I think that there might be value in having a public hearing on that issue just so that we can help inform the legislative session ahead of time, since it was Portland who was one of the strongest advocates for it in the previous version.
The only comment I'll make, Commissioner, is, and don't shoot the messenger on this, please, I do think that things are pretty far along since we haven't had an official position since 2009. To weigh in at this point when the governor and the speaker and others at least have a proposal they're going to bring before the body, I think it may seem like it's coming out of left field. And it's not that there isn't potentially value. It's a larger question is what's our role as Portland. I will say that there is going to be a public hearing next week. And what I would suggest is that anybody listening to the broadcast who has an opinion on what the new proposal is, I would encourage them to go to Salem and testify. That is going to be a very effective way for people who have a difference, you know, when it was a previous bi-state program. But I would caution against weighing in too late as the city. And I don't say that lightly. So
for folks who can't take the day off to go to Salem, how would they send their advice to their legislators?
I would suggest that, like with any issue where there or citizens care about, is email your legislator. And if you don't know who your legislator is, you can go on the state legislative website and look it up. There's a Find Your Legislator tool, and send them an email or call them and let them know how you feel about this or any other issue. I think it's good practice if you haven't been on the website to see how that works. And legislative offices really love hearing from their constituents. I do think it's important, though, that I would be sure to contact your member, because some offices actually don't necessarily appreciate at the same level being contacted by some of the other districts. I would use your member as the advocate.
Can I make a suggestion on that front? Could we just agree on some website that we'd have that announcement with the list and some link to a map, because I think for a lot of people that, you know, there's some flux, there's some change going on right now in terms of legislative leadership in a couple of districts. And to your point, Commissioner Fritz, whether it's on your City Hall webpage or Martha on yours or wherever, I think one place where someone could go and get information about the issue and know who their legislator is would be very useful.
Great.
I would encourage us to just pick a website and put that information on it.
And thank you, Commissioner. All of that information is on the Office of Government Relations website, which you can access just through the Portland Online. The other thing is I can provide the state legislative website, which is fairly straightforward. It's www.leg.state.or.us. And not only are there good research tools like finding your legislator, but great tools about how the system in Salem works and also the agenda schedule. Dan reminded me, I think I misspoke earlier, that the hearing on the Columbia River Crossing hasn't actually been scheduled. When it is scheduled, it will be up on that state legislative website. So I would encourage people to continue to track that and to participate in the process as the legislature moves toward the February session.
Thanks. So if you could let me know when that session is scheduled, but in the meantime, I'll put something on my blog about this is how you put the links to your site and theirs, so that because people don't need to wait till the hearing schedule to send in their input.
That's great. Thank you, Commissioner.
Also, before you leave that short list of major issues, could you just elaborate a little bit on what you think is going to be in front of those session on telecommunications franchise fees?
Sure. So last session, there was actually an effort where cities around the state worked with cable operators to try to remove some of the existing preemptions on telecommunications franchise fees. That effort was ultimately unsuccessful, and we've heard that there may be a bill this session with telecommunications service providers and cable operators joining forces to essentially further limit city authority to impose telecommunications franchise fees with potential implications for the city's utility license fee as well.
It's a big deal, Mr. Mayor, and I think what we are doing now is working with the League of Cities and other cities and the state to be meeting with some of the key members now before there's a bill and to make sure that we're at the table for any discussions that could potentially impact the city's revenue streams.
So turning to 2013-2015 budget considerations.
Actually, Dan, just on the marijuana issue, there's a question, I think, as to legalization, which we used to have an answer to until Peter Tosh's untimely death on September 11, 1987, which is, if we legalize it, who will advertise it? And I hope our legislators are prepared to answer that question.
That's a good point, and we haven't had a discussion at the local level on marijuana. And as a retired nurse, I'm strongly in favor of medical marijuana and strongly opposed to legalizing marijuana. We had a incident over the weekend with a bar in which one report I read said that the whole bar reeked of marijuana. And so we haven't done a spectacularly good job of regulating alcohol, in my opinion, or at least the city bears a lot of impacts from the legal use of alcohol. So I have great concerns about the public safety issue as well as the implications for medical marijuana use of the proposal.
This item has to do with whether they will refer to the voters, correct?
Yeah, that's I don't correct. Know.
Ultimately, it'll be an initiative or a referendum.
Right, but then you get into the who can pay the most to advertise to folks rather than the principle of the issue. I don't know that it's in the city's best interest to encourage the legislature to make it easier to put it on the ballot.
And thank you for those comments. Commissioner, at this point, you'll notice that we haven't included it in the draft state agenda. Having said that, we expect that it's going to potentially have a substantial amount of discussion. So what my office would propose doing is to closely monitor any legislation, make sure that we're running it by our experts here at the city so that some of the issues you've raised, public safety being chiefly among them, revenue, because there is a revenue sharing model. That's something we're going to talk about later for liquor. But if there is going to be a framework that the legislature is going to refer, I think we want to be at the table for that. But we also haven't specifically called it out as a city item because it isn't anything where the city would play a lead role necessarily. But I do think we want to make sure if the legislature acts, it's going to act in a smart way that's not going to have unintended consequences.
Sure. having adopted a biennial budget in 2013, the legislature will not be adopting a budget in 2014. However, they may consider adjusting budgetary items on a case-by-case basis. The most recent state revenue forecast on August 28th held relatively steady. The combined general fund and lottery fund revenues decreased from the close of session forecast by $37 million, which represents a very small percentage of the total $16.4 billion state budget. The next forecast will be on November 21st, and then there will be another forecast in early to mid-February. If the forecast continues to hold steady, there will be very little opportunity for new funding items. However, one exception is that the reforms to the senior medical deduction during the recent special legislative session provide $25 million in funding that the legislature will allocate for senior programs in February.
Dan, I feel stupid not knowing this, but on the lottery, has Jack Roberts been confirmed?
I believe the Senate confirmations are occurring in November during the legislative days.
When is that?
I'm not sure which day they're going to the floor for confirmation hearings or consideration, but legislative days are November 20th through 22nd.
Since 1994, really, the Oregon Lottery has followed a rather haphazard process of determining how much of lottery revenues to give to the taverns that have video lottery machines. And there's substantial evidence that they are paying way more than they need, which is that they need to, which is, means that there's less money going to schools and economic development than there should. And this doesn't have to be part of our legislative agenda, but I would encourage my colleagues and everyone who's listening to ask your senator if they're going to ask Jack Roberts, who is a smart guy who I'm fond of, and I'm sure he'll do a good job, but will he propose doing an analysis of whether they're overpaying the retailers before the next contract comes up, which I think is in 2015?
The legislator asks a question, we can send Jackie Dingfelder down to as a former legislator, she'll have at least the privilege of the first question. But since Steve mentioned confirmation, reminds me, do we know where the new governing board for PSU stands? My understanding was the original recommendations by the governor were not acted on or were turned down by the legislature over a dispute about whether there'd be a voting member of the faculty on that body. Do we know where that is today?
Commissioner, I understand they pulled back. There wasn't a quorum, or they had a quorum, but barely, for the September legislative days. So I think they wanted to pull back, make some tweaks, and then bring it back in November. If that changes, we'll let you know. But my understanding is that they will bring back the governing boards in the November days.
Of course, I have to reveal I have a self-interest in this and that my wife's been lobbying on this question, but under the old structure, there was a representation by the faculty. Mm-hmm. Under the new structure, it was left to the governor to decide whether he was going to include a faculty member on the governing board with voting authority. He made the decision to do that, but there are those in the legislature who disagree with that and have even framed it mysteriously in my mind as a conflict of interest question. Mm-hmm. Apparently there's no limitation on the number of people who are pro sports that can be on these bodies, but if you're pro education, if you're providing the most important resource in the institution, there's a question that's been raised whether you should have a vote on the governing body. But if you could keep us posted on
sure.
that.
Sure, well, we'll look into that and get back to you.
The draft legislative agenda that we're discussing with you today is comprised of four key themes. One, make smart investments in the community. Two, support stable long-term revenue. Three, advocate for local authority. And four, promote a safer city. So with that, Andy and I will walk through the list of six items in the draft legislative agenda.
Thank you and good morning. The first item on the list is closing the 911 tax loophole for prepaid cell phones. And if you remember from our 2013 agenda, this was a priority, along with extending the sunset of the 911 tax. The legislature did extend the sunset on the 911 tax, but did not address the prepaid loophole due to a disagreement over how to collect the tax. Closing the prepaid loophole could mean up to $1 million a year for BOEC.
The next item on the list is expand financing options for energy efficiency building retrofits. Current statute enacted a few years ago authorizes a city or county to provide loans capitalized using general revenue bonds within a local improvement district to willing individual property owners to make energy efficiency investments in buildings. This concept would allow private entities to provide those loans, thereby creating a more open market and incentivizing energy efficiency investments in buildings.
And the next item on the list is restoring funding for the Emergency Housing Account and the State Homeless Assistance Program, EHA and SHAP. EHA is a flexible tool to provide short-term help to stabilize individuals and families and to prevent them from falling into homelessness. SHAP is used to provide emergency shelter and is especially targeted towards those escaping violent situations. The Housing Alliance is taking the lead on this funding request, and it's to restore both accounts to pre-recession levels, plus inflation, which would mean adding back about $4 million to the emergency housing account and $1 million to the state homeless assistance program. And moving on to gun safety through background checks. This item was also a city priority in 2013. The 2013 legislature considered a package of gun safety legislation, which advanced out of the Senate Judiciary Committee but failed to receive a vote on the floor. The legislature would require background checks. This session we expect the background check legislation from the package to be revisited and will likely be considered as a standalone issue.
Senator Burdick has certainly been active on it. I would say this bill is going to be led by Senator Floyd Prezonsky, who's the chair of the Judiciary Committee. I think that he certainly has expressed an interest that there be a vote on this bill, which seems to be, in their mind, the most sort of common sense piece of the gun safety package.
The next item on the list is protect and advocate for local government authority. This item is in recognition that local governments are often in the best position to respond to the needs of the community. The City of Portland opposes efforts to preempt its authority to develop and enforce local ordinances, manage its bureaus and functions, raise local revenues, or avoid state-imposed tax expenditures on local governments. Preemptions that could be imposed in the next legislative session include the franchise fee legislation that we previously mentioned, which could have implications both for the city's utility license fee as well as the city's business license tax. There's the potential that there might be conversation around preempting local government ordinances regarding paid sick leave. In addition, we expect consideration of legislation to clarify city authority to manage sidewalk use and safety in the upcoming legislative session. The next item on the list is also
before you move on from that,
sure.
I generally support the protecting local government authority. I would like to see what proposals are put forward, particularly for sidewalk management. I'm sure Commissioner Novick is similarly interested in looking at what is proposed to make sure that it doesn't take away protections that are constitutionally or otherwise provided by the state. And then I'd also like to have on our list as a priority advocating for protected sick time at the state level, which I appreciate government relations keeping my staff and me in the loop on the work sessions that are going on that. It sounds like there is a potential for it to move even in the short session. So I think that should be a priority as long as it's good enough that it doesn't weaken Portland's law.
And on that, Commissioner, thanks for flagging that. Because there is a work group, I think we're still trying to determine whether they're going to bring something forward for February. And maybe we can come back to you. If it looks like there's going to be a bill, then we'll come back to you and council about it being on the list. If it looks like it's going to need some more work, we may want to wait until 2015. But all the items that we've been flagging, including, let's see what kind of standard you come up with. We'd like to bring that back to council before they make a decision if it's going to be statewide or if Portland will get some sort of grandfather.
Well, I almost stopped you earlier, but maybe now I'll stop you now because this sort of provokes the discussion that I wanted to have, and that is at least I, maybe other members of the council, are still adjusting to the new choreography of, you know, annual sessions, one of which is truncated and limited in the number of bills. So help at least me understand in terms of your evaluation of what's likely to not happen in the 2014 session and be saved for 2015 versus stuff that's actually going to get addressed or taken up. I mean, I understand with the CRC, the governor either has the votes or he doesn't. You know, I get it on that one. But gun safety or utility franchise fees or revenue for transportation and the transfer of orphan state highways to the city. You know, there are a lot of issues that we care about. Some of them aren't going to get talked about until next year. How is that getting sorted out? Mm-hmm. Is it a wholly political call by the legislative leadership and the governor? Are there sideboards on what gets considered in the short session? I need that tutorial because I'm still stuck in the old world order of, you know, 30 years of watching the legislature go through a biennial rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mayor. It's a great question and one where we've now had a couple cycles of what this feels like. I think the short answer to your question is yes, it's all of those things. Legislative leadership will shape an agenda that they feel like they can get done in 35 days, maximum. What that means is the issues that haven't previously been worked quite a bit are going to have a really hard time navigating their way through the process. Not only are there a limited number of bills, but the timelines are so short and so accelerated to have a hearing and a work session and go to the floor that you pretty much only have a maximum of 2 weeks to complete the process in one side, and then you rinse and repeat in the other chamber, which means even the during a typical long session, there's plenty of time for dialogue and there's plenty of time to work on amendments and to work with partners. There literally isn't time to get things drafted sometimes during a short session. So our thinking is primarily in that the things that didn't get done in the last regular session that were really close, like closing the 911 loophole, like potentially background checks, although I'm not sure the math has changed necessarily on the issues. Commissioner Novick has been working with some state legislators on closing the loophole on 911. I at least think that's in the ballpark because it's already received a lot of work and a lot of dialogue. But the issues that are more complicated and really don't have a almost unanimous coalition going to support are not likely to move out of the February session. So we're looking at the things that are most likely to move are mainly issues of where there's already consensus, sort of temporary fix bills or fixing bills, housekeeping bills from more complicated legislation they passed in 2013 where they thought, oops, we should really make these changes going forward, and then things that have received a substantial amount of work already. Otherwise, there really isn't time, frankly, to move through the process.
So following up on that question, we think about the governor, the House Speaker, the Senate President. We also think about Senator Johnson, who mm-hmm. has a unique role. Mm-hmm. So when do the key, and then the committee chair people, when do the key players show their hand? We knew going into the last session that Speaker Kotek was going to make Section 8 reform her legislative priority, for example. So when do we have a sense going into this session of what the priorities are?
Thank you, Commissioner. At this point, each of the caucus offices on the Democratic side and the Republican side in the House and the Senate are working on what's their platform for 2014. So at some point between now and the end of the year, they will daylight that, and that will at least give us a sense of where's leadership going. The other piece is, I think, during the November committees, They will be having informational hearings on some of the bills that they intend to bring forward. So I would say by the end of this month, we're going to have a much stronger sense of what's leadership's appetite to move bills. What are they trying to set the table for in 2014? That's then a much bigger lift for 2015. My guess is sort of through the end of this year, given that we're now discussing draft concepts, I would say we're much farther along than a lot of folks are at this stage. Having said that, the drafting deadline is in November. So if we want bills drafted, we have to get them. We basically have to put a placeholder in by the end of this month, which is why we're having this discussion now.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
The last item on the list is protect and enhance state shared revenue. State shared revenue includes liquor revenue, tobacco tax revenue, as well as 911 excise tax revenue. All of these funding sources are essential for funding critical city services. In addition to protecting the existing sources of state shared revenue, the city will advocate for future revenue sharing formulas to support funding for those critical services moving forward. And as we've discussed, there might be an opportunity in February.
All right, other questions, comments, additions?
I just wanted to raise a potential comment, consideration. So I realize this is only the second short session, but in our past few years, we've always had something called our rural agenda. And I'm just wondering if there's something, because it would even stick out more in a short session on two pieces of paper, if there's some item that we could support that constitutes our rural agenda.
Well, you could vote for my biosolids ordinance tomorrow, which we're bringing to council that has a direct link to rural Oregon following.
Well, that's true.
You know this one.
That's true.
I think you actually started that ball rolling, so we'll have that discussion.
But I'm just wondering if there's something somebody, is supporting that we could add.
Thanks for that question, Commissioner. And yes, we have really been very active in identifying pieces of legislation of primary importance to rural Oregon. At this point, we have not identified anything, but we are still reaching out to some of our partners in other parts of the state. And what we will do is we'll sort of continue to see if we can find a specific piece of legislation that we know will be of primary importance to rural Oregon, then get back to you on that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, and actually the last bullet I was wondering about is there going to be action in the 2014 session on the critical situation in Southwest Oregon with these counties that are facing insolvency and are unable to pass voter-approved levies for basic services, and is the legislature going to be grappling with that issue, and is there something the city of Portland should do in solidarity with local governments, albeit mostly county governments that are in tough shape elsewhere in the state. So
the legislature did quite a bit of work on that topic in the 2013 session, including authorizing the governor with the agreement of county commissioners to potentially impose a county-level income tax. So far as I'm aware, there may be consideration of utilizing some of the authorization that was provided by the last legislative session, but I have not heard of significant rumblings about revisiting the issue on the legislative front.
So the legislative authority is there. They don't have to pass legislation to give the governor that authority. It's a question of using it. Okay. So, yeah, I think it would be good for us to be watching for that kind of issue where, as Dan suggested, we've had a practice, and I like it, of looking for an issue where we can show support for rural Oregon, whether it's agricultural or exports or education or public finance, whatever the issue category might be. I think it's good politics and good policy for us to do that.
For some reason, the reference to rural Oregon reminded me of this, and I apologize for not bringing it up before. There was some discussion and it was on our agenda last time, banning or imposing fees on studded tires in the last session. And I'm wondering whether we could add that to our local authority list, because there would be an argument, I think, for having local fees on studded tires in areas where people have less use for them than in some more rural areas. Now, I should add that Minnesota, I think, has banned set of tires, even though they have rural areas and lots of snow. But what was the discussion on set of tires last time? Do you think it might be worth taking a run at sort of a local option?
There was quite a bit of discussion in committee on that topic last session, and frankly, quite a bit of controversy. And I think generally acknowledgement that the state does not have very good data about the relative impact of studded tires in different parts of the state regarding different weather patterns and different traffic volumes. So there was some discussion about whether roads would sort of naturally wear due to weather patterns or traffic volumes at a rate faster or slower than the impact of studded tires. Eventually, the bills were narrowed down to a bill to update the state's study of the impact of studded tires.
And on that, Commissioner, I would just say I think the preemption piece is something we should probably work on because on something like transportation, I think that the state would push back pretty hard if Portland tried to create its own system of regulation with car, you know, with movement of vehicles kind of coming, you know, in and out of the city. I don't think we'd get a lot of traction, so to speak, with that. So, but I do think we should talk about what potentially that looks like in terms of a bill in 2015. I'm not sure we're going to see any action in the short session on it.
I was thinking about just the tax option. Mm. I mean, mm-hmm. if Multnomah and Washington and Clackamas mm-hmm. decided that we were going to tax the sale of studded tires, then there'd be fewer studded tires driving around here by mm-hmm. people who live here.
Mm. So I have a few more items, wondering whether they're for this session. Probably most of them aren't, but certainly now is probably the time to start looking at 2015 as well. One is, and we discussed this in the last session, incentives for people to become professional mental health care providers. The challenge being that even when you have insurance, you can't get an appointment because there aren't enough providers. So that, and then similarly, and maybe this goes to our federal agenda too, funding for Alliance for Life, which formerly Oregon Partnership handles suicide calls from the nation as well as from the entire state of Oregon. And I'm going to be having a report to council sometime soon on the pilot project that we did with the new number. But the sum total is calls are up. And so there needs to be funding provided for those phone calls to be answered by people who are trained to do that. Second policy issue is the Superfund and Brownfields remediation. There was some discussion at the Metro Policy Advisory Committee about options for that, and I know there was some discussion in the last session where there's a way to move forward with some state assistance for people to do the right thing if they wanted to early. And then thirdly, the issue of the alcohol impact area, which we took a good run at with Speaker Kotek's assistance last time, and then more specifically the issue from this weekend that was highlighted with local control of emergency closures and trying to get more authority for the police chief and or the police commissioner to, without having to lobby OLCC on a holiday weekend, to get emergency closures where there's a clear danger to a public safety issue. Do you think that last one might fly in this session, or is that more of a long session?
You know, I agree with you that I think we made some significant strides in this last session, and Andy was our lead lobbyist on those bills. I do think the short session is going to be very difficult to introduce any bills that we weren't necessarily successful on if they weren't close. And I still think we probably have some work and some education to do with members that we should be doing starting now in order to lead up to the next long session. But I agree with you. I think they're still very much very important issues, and our delegation knows that we support them. I just think 2014, if you just think of sort of the political math, I don't think we want to have two losses in a row before we come back for a longer session. I think we want to take the time to do the education and talk to members about why the authority is needed and how Portland intends to use it.
But this does argue for us having a work session, I mean, fairly closely following the 2014 session, to start really building, laying the groundwork. I mean, transportation is one, all the OLCC and liquor issues, including the one you just mentioned, you know, we should be starting 6 months, 8 months before the legislative session on those issues, and or even now in the case of transportation. But you know, there's no time like the present, and we don't want to be, you know, 6-8 weeks before the session trying to build a coalition for some of those. So we ought to, I think, as a council, meet a little more frequently with you in the coming year after the short session to be gearing up for those. Yeah, by the way, I think that you're right. We cobbled together a solution this weekend. The OLCC was very cooperative. However, it's a convoluted system, and that argues for something smoother, more streamlined with greater authority for an obvious public safety situation. Other comments, other suggestions about the state legislative agenda as it now stands? Are we good with this to draft it and bring it back to council hearing? Okay.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Council. We will continue to refine the drafts that are before you today with your comments and share drafts with you middle of next month and, as Dan mentioned, for council consideration in January. I just do want to thank each of you for your leadership and also for your respective staffs. We've been working closely with them to get to the point where we are now. Also want to give a special acknowledgement for each of the legislative liaisons in the bureaus. They serve year-round as our experts on these issues, and it's a very time-intensive task, and so just want to thank them and, again, thank members of my team for getting us to where we are today.
Thank you. Good work.
Appreciate it.
Good work. Thanks.